That's Jeff Pitchell's Fat Cigar you're listening to, and that means it's time for Not Just Blowing Smoke, coming at you live from Twin Smoke Shop Studio Headquarters in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Be sure to subscribe to us on Podbean, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, iTunes, Google, or wherever else you get your podcast from. Welcome, everybody. I'm Pastor Padron, and I have Tequila Talia here tonight.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Talia. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing awesome. And we have a special episode for you tonight. This is a kind of weird episode in that, you know, Dave, you know, our podcast producer is gone. So I'm learning how to do this myself. And Nick, my other co-host, is gone. So I'm here with Talia by myself. But we're going to have a great time tonight. And we're getting ready for our Petey Blinders Peterson event this coming weekend, and we're smoking San Sepulcro pipe tobacco from Cornell and Deal. And you brought something very, very special to drink with it tonight. What did you bring, Talia?
I did. I brought the Red Breast 15-year this
15-year.
Time.
15-year?
The 15.
Yeah. How is that different from the 12?
So, about 12, about 3 years there, Dan.
Oh.
No.
Really, Talia, really? I mean, come on.
No, but seriously, though, it really is just a difference of 3 years, but 3 years in a cask makes all the difference. It just shows how much the wood affects the flavor of the whiskey. So the longer it sits in that wood, and with the Red Breast, as we know, we've talked about it before. We've had the 12-year, the Lustau. We've had those on here before. Mm-hmm. It is American oak and sherry casks that they are aging it in. Mm-hmm. So the longer it sits in those barrels, the more flavor you're getting. And with the Red Breast 15, I don't know if you've noticed it. I'm not very good at picking out specific flavors, but with this one, I pick out green apple right away. Right on the nose, right in my palate, it's just green apple, and then a little bit of spiciness at the end.
Let me tell you a little bit about what we're smoking tonight. We are smoking pipe tobacco tonight. We're smoking Cornell and Deal's small batch San Sepulcro. And this is a special blend that they have come out with several times in the past. But this time it's in a flake instead of a ribbon form. And from their website, laudisi.com, it says, merging the old world with the new San Sepulcro. San Sepulcro. These Italian words, I just
can't. Oh, my gosh, I know.
Get your tongue down. Is a very special entry into the small batch project, carefully blended from unique Italian dark-fired leaf and some of the finest red Virginias from North Carolina. Aromatically spicy with earthy clove-like undertones, this Italian dark fire leaf is grown in the San Sepulcro region of Italy, which boasts a history and tradition of tobacco cultivation to the 17th century. That'd be the 1600s for
I
you
reckon.
People. Combined with mellow citrus and bread-like notes of the reds, it makes for a wonderful melange of flavors and aromas at once both familiar and exotic. Like I said, this time around, it's a flake, and I think that's made a big difference. They've changed up the different grades of tobacco that are used in this, and when you do that, and then you go through the process of making the flake tobacco, I think you get something a lot darker and richer, but it's going great with the Red Breast, dude.
It is.
You know, you were telling me before the show aired that you kind of get some apple notes from the Red Breast. Do you get that from all of them or just from the 15?
I have only picked it up on the 15.
Only on the 15. And
I mean, I'm not very good at picking out flavors. So, so specific as to say apple.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Red Breast 15 is the only one that I can say, yep. You know, right on the nose, like the minute I put the glass up, it's like green apple.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing I notice about it.
Mm. And the clove-like spice that this has really complements that. So I think we're going to have a very good time tonight, Talia.
Absolutely.
It's going to be good. And, you know, you mentioned it already. We have the Petey Blinders event coming up on Saturday here at Twins.
Yes, sir.
It's something we've done for the past few years. It's our biggest Peterson pipe event of the year. We have Kaz Walters coming in from Laudisi. He's basically, for all intents and purposes, the national head of sales for Peterson Pipes in the U.S. He's going to be here. Talia's going to be here.
I will. And it's always fun.
It's going to be an awesome, awesome time. In addition to having the pipes here for sale, there's going to be a $30 event that you can do where you basically join the Petey Blinders. And joining has its privileges.
Indeed.
Okay. Let me tell you what some of those privileges are. You're going to get exclusive. People who do the who join the Petey Blinders are going to get exclusive discounts on Peterson Pipes that are also going to include a swag bag of stuff from Peterson and Jameson. And I haven't seen the swag that you're bringing yet.
Nope.
But just the stuff that he's bringing is like 50, 60 bucks worth of things retail-wise.
Oh, yeah.
So the swag bag is going to be awesome. So you're going to get your money back right with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a tasting of Redbreast 12-year Irish whiskey.
Yes, there is.
Available to everybody. There's going to be a Jameson Black Barrel pour for everybody when we do a toast.
We'll do a toast with that one.
In the middle of the event. And we have just about the entire line of GLP's Old London Series tobacco to smoke. The only two we don't have are Penny Farthing, which they're out of at the moment, and Temple Bar, which is a plug. And being that we're going to be up here at the bar, right where we're doing this recording, there's no real place to cut stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we're just not going to do that one.
Nope, and being at the bar is going to be great for me because I get to push these kids to drink.
Yes, and I'm
have a beverage while you're hanging out.
We're gonna, and I'm working on getting some Jameson and Redbreast specials at the bar.
Absolutely,
for everybody who's part of that. There's also going to be some food, and there's also going to be prizes for the best dress, the best flat cap, and wearing the most green, and we're going to be making an announcement about our next project here at the Twins Pipe Club, and I'm wicked excited about it. I'm keeping it very mum. You have to be here.
I don't even know what it is.
2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. You have to be here at 2 o'clock, and we're going to do a little presentation and show you what our next big move is, and it's awesome. I can't wait to share with you guys. We'll talk about it next week on the podcast with Kaz, and Talia will be back next week as well. After the event, it'll kind of be the after party for that event. But I'm wicked excited about it. 12 to 4 here in the 724 Lounge this coming Saturday, March 9th. It's going to be a really, really good time.
It's always fun. What's this, my third year? Fourth
I think
year
so.
Or something like that?
It's got to be. It's at least your third.
Yep.
You know, I think once I realized I could, you know, involve liquor at these events, it just took things to a whole new level.
Yep.
You know?
Well, that, cigars and whiskey, I mean, they just go hand in hand.
They
or tequila.
Do.
You
yes,
know, or tequila
too.
If I do that, you know.
Yep. Yep. Anybody who knows Kurt knows that tequila pairs well with cigars.
Yes, it does.
But it has to be good tequila.
Of course. I mean, I don't drink it. It's not good tequila. Come on now.
Yep. It's funny. My daughter, Maggie, who's living out in Ohio right now, she was asking me about getting tequila. And I said, don't buy that. There are some things you just need to avoid.
Yes, there's
and
usually
I gave
three.
Her some brands that she should just avoid at all costs. I said, I don't care what you see, what posters you see, what commercials you see, do not get these things.
Nope. There's usually three right off the bat that I'd mentioned.
Yep.
These ones just don't do it.
Yep.
Don't do it to yourself.
Yep. And, she's a young kid. She doesn't have a lot. So I recommended that she try the Altos if they can find it out there.
Absolutely. The Altos is, it's a great mid-level tequila. It's inexpensive, but high quality. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm excited to hear back from her, see if she does that.
Yeah, what's funny is when I was just on vacation, the little mini mart in our condo, like, resort had Avión tequila.
Really?
Yeah.
You must have been pumped.
I was in heaven.
Were you able to write off?
No, not in the Caribbean. Pretty sure my corporate card wouldn't have even worked in the Caribbean.
No,
let's just say, though, they had three bottles on the shelf, and in the end of the week, they were all gone.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Which Avión did they have?
Just the silver, but still. Mm-hmm. It's still good. Good quality tequila.
It's not the 44.
No, no, no. If they had had that and I went through three bottles, there goes $450.
Oh, my goodness. So you just kind of let the cat out of the bag. You've been down in the Caribbean for vacation.
Yes, I was.
That's
got to
be awesome.
It was beautiful. 85 and sunny every single day.
Really?
We got so lucky. Not a single day of rain.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there was a little bit of clouds, it was actually so hot, I welcomed it.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
It was gorgeous.
How warm was the water?
It was very nice. It wasn't like bath water, which I liked because, you know, sometimes you go like to Florida in the summer and you can't even swim because it's so hot.
No.
So this was still refreshing, but it wasn't so cold that you couldn't go in. Like up here. So the water was gorgeous. The sun was out every day, like I said. I mean, we were just beach bums for a whole week.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
I saw the view from your condo or whatever you were at. I mean, it was amazing.
It seriously looked fake.
Oh, my gosh, right out of a movie.
Yeah, it looked fake. I looked out the window, and I go, this is fake. I want to, like, throw a rock and go through the screen. Like, what's behind this?
Oh,
is this real?
Oh, my gosh.
And it was so quiet. We were on this very small resort, very small beach, not a lot of people.
How did you end up there? How did this whole thing come about?
So Kevin's golf buddy has a timeshare, and he never uses it. So he mentioned it to us, and he asked us, hey, you know, we're not using it this year. You guys could stay. Just pay for your airfare. So we didn't even have to pay.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I mean, for the flight.
Right,
we paid, but we didn't have to pay the however much it would have been to stay. Because it was a big spot, too. Two bedroom, two bathroom, little kitchenette, huge balcony.
That's
right
fantastic.
On the beach. Yep. So we got very lucky that he allowed us to use his condo for a week.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Have you ever been to the Caribbean before?
No. First time.
Will you go back?
I would, yes. So, I've been to the Mediterranean, and I've been to the Caribbean now. Just starting on my travels. And the Mediterranean kicks the Caribbean's ass. I mean, just up and down.
No, why so?
I would, you know what's funny? Is actually the food.
The food.
Honestly, I think the biggest thing is the food. And obviously, you know, you go to the Mediterranean, you're in Italy, or you're in Greece, or you're wherever. And there's things to see. There's cities to see. There's ruins. There's gorgeous scenery. There, you know, everywhere that you go is just history.
Right.
So it's not like that in the Caribbean. You know, it's like, it's just not the same. At least where I was. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's other islands that are like that. But where
I
was. I
don't think anything has the history that
Greece Europe,
and Italy and Europe does. And
So that's another thing is that the Caribbean. If I go to the Caribbean again, I'll stay there because I don't have to pay. And it's just like a beach vacation. It's just relaxing. I don't want to do anything but stay on the beach.
There's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for just doing nothing and sitting on the beach.
And the food, you know, the food was not actually what I was expecting. It was nothing. I didn't ever have a meal down there that I couldn't have here.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
The food wasn't special that way. That you can get whatever you want here, down there.
Yeah. And it just, you know, I was expecting a lot of freshness. I don't know if it's just where we were. Not a lot of fresh, you know. I was expecting, like, fresh fruit and, like, vegetables and all this stuff. And it was all quite heavy. I mean, there was not. I liked it. The food was fine. But it just wasn't what I was expecting.
Okay.
And certainly not what you find in you know, Southern Europe in the Mediterranean.
Well,
that was just...
You are kind of a foodie, too.
Yeah. That's a big thing for me is food. So, like, people tell me, oh, you went to Ireland? How's the food? I'm like, I ate fish and chips and steak all week. It was fine, I guess. You know? I mean, the country was gorgeous, but the food was, like, we get here. Like, that was not. So, yeah, food is a big draw for me going places.
Mm. Now, what is that? What is that Greek thing that Kurt likes?
Spanakopita.
Spanakopita. Mm. What was that like?
It's my favorite food in the world.
That's your favorite food in the world. Now,
only the way that my yaya's recipe. Like, you get it at a restaurant. I don't think I've ever had it out the way that we make it. Mm-hmm. So I really, it's my favorite food if I make it.
Now, what do you do that makes this stuff so good, and what do other people do that messes it up to you?
The biggest one is not putting enough feta cheese in there. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest, actually tied for first, is not putting enough feta cheese and using frozen spinach.
And what exactly is this stuff? What is spanakopita?
Spanakopita is, you know, phyllo dough, that really, really thin, paper thin. Mm-hmm. So you just layer a bunch of that. Now, most people use butter. I use Greek olive oil in between each layer. Mm-hmm. So you layer it a bunch, and then you fill it. So you fill it with, like, a spinach and feta mixture. Mm-hmm. That just has, like, eggs and milk, spinach and feta. That's it.
Okay.
And you put that on, and then you layer it again.
Okay.
So a lot of other places, too, they do some phyllo, some filling. Some phyllo, some filling. Mm-hmm. I do all the filling in the middle.
Mm. And then layers.
Layers on top and on bottom. And it comes out crispy.
How many layers do you do?
8 to 10, depending on how thin the sheets are.
Okay.
It takes a while.
Do you make the sheets yourself, or do you buy them?
No.
You should have seen the look I just got. You want
even,
crack?
Even my yaya didn't make her own phyllo dough. That is a process. Mm-hmm. And it is borderline impossible to get it as thin as I want it to be. And I'm just not a baker. Like, bread, cakes, dough, any kind of stuff like that is not my jam because it's too precise.
So where do you go to get it?
Hannaford Market Basket.
Really?
Yep, they have it in the freezer section with all
the
frozen
section.
Yep, with, like, the frozen pie crusts.
Mm-hmm.
Athens is the best brand that I have found. It's hard to find now, but that's the best brand. It's like a white box. And I get the sheets. So some people make little cups, some people make them in little triangles for appetizers. I do the sheets, so I make a big sheet pan of it.
Are you bringing someone?
I have it on my calendar to make it for Saturday.
Oh my
Kurt, better come and have some.
Well, you know, if he doesn't,
more for us.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah, Greek food is the best food, hands down.
What's your favorite Greek food?
Spanakopita, babe.
Spanakopita, that's it.
Well, my favorite meal.
What
other things do I like?
Yeah, what other things do you like?
Okay.
You can't
pasticcio.
Live on spanakopita.
I could.
You could?
Well, spanakopita and lamb.
And
bread.
Oh, lamb.
And
tomatoes
and cucumbers. So my favorite meal is what we have for Pascha or Easter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's roasted lamb, preferably on a spit, with this spanakopita. Like a Greek salad, which does not have lettuce.
Mm.
Greek salad does not have lettuce.
What does Greek salad have if it doesn't have lettuce?
Tomatoes, cucumbers, red onions, olive oil, lemon juice, red wine vinegar, salt and pepper, and then whatever herbs I like to put in, dill, you know, maybe a little parsley. Whatever fresh herbs you got kicking around. Mm-hmm. I usually have a bundle of them that I just chop all up and put in there. Mint goes good, too.
Oh, mint. Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll put a little yidindes on the side, which is baked lima beans. Sounds disgusting. Amazing. It's this lima bean dish, and it's so simple. It's just tomato, garlic, olive oil, and you just bake it.
With lima beans.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Who came up with that idea?
I don't know. The Greeks.
Somebody had to be desperate.
I guess so, but it's amazing. You got to soak the beans and peel them, though. So you soak them overnight and peel them the next day. So it's quite a hassle to make. Mm. But it's so good. Lima beans are disgusting. Not in this.
My wife just does not like lima beans. I like lima beans.
Okay. Well, you would love this, then.
You know, I probably would. What is your favorite thing to cook?
Ooh, that's tough. I love cooking so many things.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That is really tough. Probably. Oh my gosh, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I really enjoy making pasticcio, which is like a Greek lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like making like this fish, so like a broiled salmon, like a dill broiled salmon. And I make it with, usually I'll do some sort of Greek rice, which is, you know, again, just put some tomatoes, garlic, onion in there, put a little tomato paste, call it a day. And either like a salad or some like roasted zucchini and squash on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I enjoy as well.
Mm. I love salmon.
Salmon is the best.
Salmon is really good. Really
mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. I know you like making chili.
Yeah, I'm really good at making chili. That's true. I like making lamb, too. That's one of my favorite things to do. I like doing butterflied legs of lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of garlic, spices.
Lots of garlic.
And, you know, and roasting it over, on the barbecue.
That most definitely.
To me, it's like the biggest reason people don't like lamb is that they've never had it cooked.
Correct.
And that it's always overcooked.
Always overcooked if you get it somewhere. Always.
You know, and medium rare.
Yep.
Is just so the stuff melts in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Yep. There actually is, shameless plug, Greek restaurant. Mm-hmm. My buddy Tommy Katz, runs this little Greek place on South Willow Street, Fotia.
Mm-hmm.
He just opened. It's unbelievable.
Really?
It's unbelievable.
In Manchester?
Mm-hmm. Right on South Willow Street where the Pizza 911 used to be.
Mm.
And it's very, very good. He has a lamb shank.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. It's so good. And I usually don't enjoy Greek restaurants because I cook it so much better at home that I'm like, ah. Mm. So this place I enjoy. My family, we go there sometimes. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we've already talked about the fact we're doing the Petey Blinders thing on Saturday, and you're coming to that. Now,
yes, sir.
Let's be honest. I know you. At most of these, you know, drinking events, you have a, you know, little book of whiskey ladies that come and do these events. But for ours, you come yourself. How come you don't send the bimbos?
Oh, please. I don't know. They don't know. You got to be able to really talk about the whiskey, right? And not a slam on any of them, but they're not. They go to support the brand so that we can spend money at an account. They don't go to talk about a good whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I have Jameson Orange and I'm doing the St. Patrick's Day promotion and it's the night before St. Patrick's Day, I'm not going to do that. You know, I send the girls.
Mm-hmm.
But for something like this where it's a daytime, you're really talking to the customers one-on-one. They want to learn about the whiskey. They want to know what they're drinking. You send a rep for that.
Yeah, so it's more educational. That's why you're
doing exactly.
Yeah. Now, speaking of that, what makes a good Irish whiskey?
Well, this one in particular.
What makes Redbreast stand apart? What makes Jameson to you stand apart?
Well, so Redbreast first. Redbreast is the single pot still.
Mm-hmm.
So pot still whiskeys, they're smooth. They're really rich in flavor because they're just in the pot stills instead of in the giant, you know, continuous stills.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to control the outcome. So the quality of a pot still whiskey is just uncomparable.
Mm-hmm.
With Jameson in particular, that's one where obviously it's mass produced. Everybody knows Jameson.
Right.
They think, okay, this is what I'm taking shots of. But Jameson is so historic. They've been doing it since the 1800s. So they're just because they're mass producing it doesn't mean they're continuing the same quality. Mm-hmm. And that's proven in the Black Barrel, which we're going to try. They do where they take some of their grain whiskey, age it in the double charred bourbon barrels and blend it with the traditional Jameson. So it's they take care and time into making things elevated.
Right, right.
And when you go to the distillery, they're extremely proud. Everybody you talk to is proud of what they're doing. So it's Jameson is a very unique Irish whiskey in that where, but besides just being historic, everybody's been doing it for generations. These people that work there, the people that build, he hand makes, you know, puts together casks. He's been doing it for 40, 50 years. So it's very traditional.
Right, right. How about Redbreast? How long have they been at it? They've been at it for 20 years.
Early 1900s.
Early 1900s. So they've been at it for 100 years.
Yeah. That's 1912, I believe. Yeah.
That's still very impressive.
Yeah.
Still
and they're distilled in the same places as Jameson is. The distillery was going to go away, the Redbreast Distillery, and Jameson said the Middleton Distillery took them under their wings so that they could continue creating amazing whiskey.
That's good. So what they've got the 12. We're drinking the 15.
Yep.
What are other Redbreast iterations that are out there?
They have a 12-year cask strength. We have tried that one, remember?
Yes, we have.
That one, was shockingly good for how strong that was. What was that, 120 proof or something like that?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
we were feeling that one. they have the Lestal, which we've done as well.
Yep.
Where they take traditional Redbreast, and they age it an additional year in the Oloroso sherry casks, the first fill sherry butts. So it gets very, very fruit forward, the Lestal.
Right.
Very fruity, that one, but still traditionally Irish spicy. And then there is the 18 year in New Hampshire. The 18 year might be in New Hampshire. It's harder to find that one, and the 21 as well.
Okay.
The 21 I only tried in Ireland. That was good. Oh, no, I think it was the 27 I tried in Ireland.
27? Oh, my gosh.
That I've never seen here.
No, I haven't seen that anywhere. I haven't seen that anywhere. I didn't even know they made a 27.
Yeah, that was, can I live in your bar, please?
Yeah.
I tried that at the Bow Street Distillery in the bar. I was like, oh, my gosh.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Let's do our, well, let's do our 724 flashback. This is a new segment that we're doing where we highlight a historical event, and talk about it. Brought to you by 724, smoke a piece of history. And today's 724 flashback is really actually kind of cool. In March of 1455, in Mainz, Germany, Johannes Gutenberg invented the printing press and, as a result, launched the Renaissance, the Reformation, the Scientific Revolution, and the Enlightenment because he wanted to print Bibles. And Bibles at the time were, to kind of give you an idea, were, you know, done by monks who would hand scribe everything, and it would take a year to produce one book, and those books cost a fortune. Almost nobody could afford them. If you were a church and you had one, it was amazing, you know. And Gutenberg invented the press with the idea of making a Latin Bible. And he printed 200 inside of 3 years. So when you think about time, that is just ridiculous. And he sold them for 30 guilders, which was about 3 years' wages for the average person. So they were still really expensive, but they were much more affordable than...
More
accessible than they had been before. And now, you know, the sad thing about Gutenberg was... it was still stupid expensive, and he ended up dying penniless.
Oh,
and his printing press was confiscated. But other people took that idea, and the printing press just kind of, in the next couple hundred years, just revolutionized Europe.
Yep.
And you just saw the expansive ideas and literacy, newspapers come about, all of a sudden, like, you know, so this was 1455. Mm-hmm. In, what is it, 15, I have notes here. In 1517, so not even 100 years later, Martin Luther prints his 95 theses and nails them on the Wittenberg church door. 17 days later, that list was being printed en masse in London, England. That's the kind of difference that this made to people.
Yep.
I mean, you think about that what was, you know, some guy just wrote out some notes and stuck them on a door because he wanted to talk, and those ideas all of a sudden, you know, go all across Europe within a couple of weeks. It's just amazing. And you think of, you know, I think the only thing that's been anywhere near that kind of influential is the internet.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know? And the printing press basically created the problems we have with the internet on a much smaller scale.
Much smaller scale. The whole idea
that everybody had a voice.
Yeah, it was right.
Everybody's opinions
voices.
Could be heard. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to say something nasty somebody, you could.
Mm-hmm.
And it went everywhere.
Yep.
And the public battles back and forth and everything. And, you know, but just the whole idea of books becoming something that anybody could get.
Mm-hmm.
Literacy went through the roof. People became very literate, and
education
and everything. I mean, and you think about it, you know, Gutenberg prints 200 Bibles, and there were like three or four people who could afford the Bibles.
No so kidding.
Like, what do you
God.
Do with the what other 195
yeah.
that you have? Thanks. And I will say too, I've been one of the 200 Bibles from that original run is at the Rare Book Library down at Yale in Connecticut.
That must be
and
something
I have,
to see.
I have seen it. It's amazing. It is really cool to see one of those and to see something where there was only 200 in
existence. No kidding. Is it in one of those like glass cases?
It is in one of those glass cases.
Does something flip the pages?
I don't know if something flipped the pages, but it is open, and so you can read it. I'm sure they have to do something like that to keep the binding from cracking
right.
and stuff like that. But, oh, my
That's
gosh.
Incredible.
As kind of a history nut, you know, that kind of, that was just amazing to be able to see that. But, you know, books just kind of revolutionize things. And so, you know, the next thing I wanted to talk about was what kind of books have had the most impact on you. Do you read a lot?
Yeah. Trust me. I have to keep buying new places to keep my books.
Yeah, yeah. They're serious. I have the same problem.
Oh my gosh.
I have the same problem. So
I've got them stacked on tables. What? I use them as like decoration now. Like, oh, here I can put my globe on this stack of books.
What books have made the biggest impact for you personally?
Impact. I read a lot of like horror and thriller. I love a good whodunit mystery.
Oh, me too.
I love a good whodunit. That's probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I like comedy. So there's this writer, Christopher Moore. He is hysterical. I read his books and I legitimately laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. Like my husband just laughs at me. What are you doing? Because I'm just cracking up reading his books.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. The author that has, I don't know if impact is the right word, but like kind of like affected me the most is fairly new. She's only written two books.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Erin Mortensen. They're fantasy books, I suppose you could call them.
Mm-hmm.
Not Dragon Lord of the Rings type fantasy, but she's written one, The Night Circus, which is what it sounds, a circus that's only around at night, but everything's in black and white. And the two main characters are real magicians, so they perform real magic.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes you, and then there's another one, The Starless Sea, which is about a library. So I'm a sucker for books about books as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have quite a few like books I've found that are like about libraries or bookstores or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so this one, The Starless Sea, he finds this world underground that is just a massive library. Mm-hmm. And the way that she writes, it's one of those books where you feel like I can picture it right now. Like, I feel like I watched a movie. Mm. That's how descriptive she is. So those two books, there's something about the two of those books that just, like, gets me. I've already reread, I've read them 3 times each. She's only,
oh wow,
I've only had them a few years, you know.
I love mysteries too. I'm a big Agatha Christie nut.
Oh yeah.
I love
her
books.
Killer.
She was just so good.
Yep.
And she's one of those authors who really throw me for a loop. Like you'd be like, I remember reading, what was it? I don't even remember. She went back at the end of the book, and Hercule Poirot and the other characters basically went back and basically showed you what you should have caught through the first, so that you would have known what had happened. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right. That's right. Why didn't I see this coming?
Yep.
I just totally missed it.
Shoot.
Yep. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
I think
she's
it was
amazing.
The Murder of Roger Ackroyd.
Was that the one? Yes.
Yeah.
That's funny that you say it, because mm-hmm. as soon as you mentioned a book where, you know, you really got thrown for a loop, mm-hmm. that's the book I thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was something at the end where it was the narrator of the book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roger Ackroyd was the narrator of the book.
It was
and
good.
Poirot basically says, you got to fess up, kid.
Yes. Yes.
And he does.
I love it.
Oh, my gosh. I was, like, so shocked. I'm like,
me
wow,
too.
This woman can write.
She's good. And
very
it's
good.
Annoying now because they're making some of her books into movies. So mm-hmm. now you buy an Agatha Christie book. You go to freaking Barnes & Noble, it's like $15 for a book I can read mm-hmm. in a day.
Yeah.
Even online, like you
they're
try to
long
find little
books.
No, they're good.
They're very good, yeah.
And they used to be, you know, I used to be able to find them for $5. Same with Stephen King. I used to buy mm-hmm. Stephen King novels for $7.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're like $15, $20.
Yep.
Because
yep.
they're becoming popular with movies.
And, you know, I like giving away books.
I let people borrow them, but I make them bring them back.
it got to the point, you know, there were some books, especially when I was pastoring, you got to read this, you got to get
mm-hmm.
it. And it got to the point where I kept giving away my own copy of a book. And that's about the time that Kindle came out, Amazon Kindle. And I got into Kindle specifically because I found that a lot of these favorite books of mine were available there, and if I bought them on Kindle, I would not be able to give them away because I always have my computer, I always have my phone,
right.
You know, or whatever. And that's just that kind of revolutionized things for me. And then, you know, audiobooks. I don't know if are you into audiobooks at all?
I'm also not into Kindle.
You're not into Kindle?
If I don't, I want
you want
the
physical book.
Book.
You want the book.
I want the
That's
book.
That's the thing. Yeah, that helped me so much. I prefer the book,
mm-hmm.
right? At the same time, my library has gotten so unwieldy. Being able to have, like, the important stuff that you like to read all the time
mm-hmm.
available to you and on a tablet or in your computer or on your phone
yep.
is just really good. You know, it doesn't take up any more space. That's basically what's dictated my whole Kindle usage. But I like listen to audiobooks in the car
yep.
all the time. I have people told me over and over, I like fantasy too and
yep.
you know all that stuff. And people told me about Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time
okay.
series. And, you know, rave about it, whatever. Now it's being made, you know, again, these things on Amazon and stuff. But I started listening to the books. And this dude, Robert Jordan, I don't know what he's just like on crack. He could write a cohesive story that went 900 pages.
Oh, my God. That's
and,
Stephen King.
I mean,
I don't know about 900.
But, like, you know, seriously, 900, 1,000, 1,100
yeah.
pages, and there's 14 of these books. And apparently he would just be like, you know, it's time for another book. Da, 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 da. A couple weeks, write a book, and then he'd wait for a couple of years. And, oh, you know, time for another book. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, my
gosh. And he would just kick them out. And, you know, I've written some books, and they take me a whole lot of freaking time and work.
I think it took me 5 years to write a 50-page story.
It does. It, you know, I really mean, respect people who can come up with something like that. But I've been listening to it, you know, these books, and getting back to your point of how expensive things are. One of the things that I don't like about the whole ebook thing is an ebook is like a file. It costs nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. But usually it's cheaper than buying the paperback.
Is. Yeah.
But or the hardback, but not by much.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I know. I see it sometimes because I buy a lot of books on Amazon because you can shop like bookstores through Amazon, and I see the Kindle one, and I'm like, okay, it's like $2 cheaper.
Yeah, and so it's like, why is it
like
still
you said,
so expensive?
Right, like you said.
I mean, there's obviously royalties involved. But you can't tell. I know royalties are. My first book I wrote with a guy named Charlie Jones, who is a best-selling author himself. He took our manuscript to the publishing house. It was one of the largest publishing houses in the United States. I think it was number 5 at the time, and went right to the president and said, "You've been asking me for a book. Here's the book." They take the book, they print it. I got a royalty check up front of $5,000 for, you know, printing the book.
Yep.
And I was like, this is awesome. And in 6 months, the book sold over 20,000 copies.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, for me, a first-time author, that's like, that's really good. When you know the average book has a run of about 4,000 books, so in the first 6 months to do 20,000 copies, that's pretty freaking good. I never saw another cent. Not another cent. And by the time the book ran its course and he ended up, Charlie, my co-author, ended up buying the rights back and ended up printing it himself because he wasn't happy about their distribution stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, if I went according to their logic, I was overpaid by about $1,500.
What?
20,000 copies.
Unbelievable.
And so, you know, to when, you know, so royalties are, you have to be like, you know, the J.K. Rowling who can like sell a million books in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
That's how you make. That's when you make your money. If you're not selling that much, you're not making a living doing writing.
Jeez.
You know, stuff like that. So,
well, that's why that's another.
But so I don't understand. So, like, even the audiobooks to like this series I'm doing, The Wheel of Time. I, you know, Amazon has its. You know, you can be a member of Audible, and for $14.95, you get a credit, and that'll get you any book you want for that month. And so that's how I've been doing it. Because if I was not a member and didn't get it for the $14.95 credit, they're $40-$50 a piece. And I'm like, you've got to be joking. These recordings have been around for 20 years.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't cost you anything to keep it. It's an audio file. These people who read it are probably dead. I mean, come on. It's like, what's
paying happening
for?
Here? Yeah.
You know, I just don't understand why. It just makes me think it's all about the money.
Of course it is.
It's all about the money.
Of course it is.
Because if it were about really, you know, you could still make money and have it be like half as much or a third as much. And because it's just a file that just gets
copied
sent off.
And sent, and
you know.
Yep. Oh, it's disgusting. I just don't like anything digital. I'm really not a fan. If I didn't have a cell phone, I would be happy. If I never had to see a computer again, I'd be thrilled. So I feel you because I get so mad about stupid things like that.
Do you like old books?
Like some old books, sometimes they're tricky to get through.
Like, no, like, do you have like old copies of a book?
Or I have
like
a few
special books. Or,
yeah, know, I have an 1867 version of Alice in Wonderland.
Oh my gosh,
that is in a case.
Yeah,
it's like only a handful of years after the original publication. So That one I have like an early 1900s of Tom Sawyer. And also of, oh my gosh, what's the other one? I have another old copy. I want to say it's a Robert Louis Stevenson book. But yeah, I do enjoy old ones, but I'm not going to, I don't buy like an old book. I'm obsessed. I go antiquing all the time. And anytime I see old books, I look. But I make sure it's a book that I'm going to be interested in. Oh, I have an old Sherlock Holmes copy too of an old Sherlock Holmes. But yeah, like something that I'm interested in or something that I'm actually going to read. I don't want to buy the ones that are falling apart, except for the Alice in Wonderland one's totally falling apart. But like, I had to have it. My my husband actually gave that to me as a gift.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he found
so
it.
Sweet.
He really is. He really is. So he, yeah, he wrapped it in paper, and so he like gave it to me for Christmas. And he's like, just be really careful when you're opening this. So I have it like on a stand in a case. But no, I love it. There's this bookstore in Portland that I could spend all day in called The Green Hand.
Oh, I know that place.
Yup. They have a lot of old copies there. You know what I just, you know what I'd love to? So the Tarzan books.
The Tarzan books.
So I've read the first two a couple of times. They're so good. And I have the third one right now. So my dad has, like, I don't know, they were probably published, whatever my dad has, maybe like 60s, 70s, where they were published, like the physical copy of his book. But they're old, you know, they're like kind of yellowy, and they're like starting to fall apart a little. I had to tape one of the covers on, so he's got like 25 of them or something. So I only read the first two because he said the rest are just kind of silly. So I went to, I tried to keep him once. So now he keeps an eye on me when I'm near the Tarzan books. The other day, I come, I found him because he had moved them into the basement. So I found him and I grabbed the first two and I stuck them by my purse. So I'm outside in the backyard and I didn't know he was coming back upstairs. And he goes, I just hear him from inside the kitchen going, "She found them. Did you take the Tarzan books? How did you get those?" Like, because I had them tucked under my bag. So I borrow them. I'm like, "Dad, I'll bring them back."
Oh my
They're like his prized possessions, but those are really good books if you haven't read those.
I have not read the original Tarzan
So
stories.
The Green Hand has...
I grew up on the television shows and
the,
stuff.
Yeah, the Green Hand has some copies, so that's my next purchase the next time I go up to Portland is the first... Too.
I love old bookshops.
Me too. I can seriously say they're all afternoon.
Yep. Yep.
I went there with Kevin, and he half an hour later, he goes, "How are you still in this section?" Like, he came to find me, and I'm still, like, two shelves down. He's like, "Why are you still in this section?" I'm up on one of the ladders.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Yep. Oh, and also, before I forget, have you ever heard of Ruth Ware, the author? She is a killer whodunit author.
Really?
Killer.
Rachel Ware.
Ruth Ware.
Ruth Ware.
She writes very well. I mean, I have maybe six of her books now, and I've read them all twice.
Really?
One by One is probably one of my favorites. Hello. It's like classic whodunit, like One by One, you know, the closed door mystery. I love them.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go out and look. That sounds awesome.
I would call her like modern day Agatha Christie. It's like all in Europe, like it's always like in Scotland or England or somewhere out there. It's very, always like that same cast of characters, you know, the posh ones and the working class ones and the bratty ones and the sweet ones. Like it's always the same crew, right? But it's so good.
Oh, that sounds great. I'll have to go looking for that. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, yeah.
What are your final thoughts here on the pipe tobacco and the drink? You obviously liked it. You just chugged the rest of your
It was just a
sip.
Well, I was telling you earlier. I was telling you earlier before the show how, well, I was picking up the green apple, right? It becomes more pronounced with the pipe, which I love because I'm not a big fan of fruitiness, but I love green apple and that spice.
Green apples are my favorite too.
That spice, the apple, the little pepperiness at the end of the red breast. So all of the flavors that I like in the 15 become more pronounced with the tobacco. And you know that that's all I care about.
Yep. It's how it makes it more enjoyable to you.
Exactly.
Well, I'm really excited that they came out with this. And I'm really excited they made it a flake. And I'm really excited I got to try it with the Redbreast 15 because this is just a great pairing.
Oh, my gosh, it is. And the tobacco itself, I mean, this is one of my favorite pipe tobaccos I've smoked with you.
Really? That is very special. Especially since it's just the two of us.
I know, right?
Podcast here with everybody gone.
Basically just shooting the shit.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you very much for being with us. And that is another episode of Not Just Blowing Smoke, Up in Smoke. Thanks for being with us. We hope if you're in the area, you come to the Petey Blinders event this Saturday, March 9th at Twins. And if not, we'll be telling you all about it next week on our podcast. We'll have Talia back on, as well as Kaz Walters from Loud DC Distribution Group. And Nick will be back with us, and it's going to be a good time. Thanks for being with us, everybody.